Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined this week by Micah. How are you doing, Micah?
Hey, Fred. How's it going?
Good. We also have, as usual, Seth Winshaw. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred. How are you?
Great. Thank you. All right. So, of course, this week, a little bit slower week in terms of EV news. It's always like that between Christmas and the new year. But still a few interesting stuff that came up this week. Just today, Tesla announced their two new board members that they needed to appoint for – oops, that's not the right one – that they needed to appoint as part of the SEC settlement for the suit that the SEC – when the SEC went after Elon Musk for what he said about the going private, the funding secured comment.
Two independent board members.
Yeah, that was part of the requirement, right? That the two new that they appoint two new board members are independent, whatever that really means, because we just learned that one of them is actually a close friend to Elon Musk. We're talking about Larry Ellison, founder of Oracle, and the other one is Caitlin Wilson Thompson. She's a longtime human resources executive. She works at Walgreens, but spent most of her career at Kellogg. She's being described as a HR expert. She's on the board of a few other companies too, but now she's on the board of Tesla too. And she looks like she fits really the independent requirement that the SEC wanted. So that has been a concern for a while with Tesla. The board being too close to Elon Musk. Every board member has some kind of direct link to Elon Musk, whether as an investor in a previous company, as a family member to Elon Musk, in the case of Kimball, his brother. And following some pressure from investor, they did hire two other, that was last year, right? When that was last year when Murdoch went on board with...
I believe so.
With another woman, too.
Was that the chairwoman who came on last year?
No. Robin Denham has been around for a long time, but another woman was a. I don't remember. She was from the media industry too. When they hired Murdoch, they hired another woman from the media industry. Anyway, that was I think last year, following some pressure from investors, but even that wasn't enough. And now the SEC, as part of the settlement, they decided we should push for more independent. Independent director and remove Elon from being the chair, and he was replaced by Robin Denholm. And now we have Ellison and Wilson Thompson. The market looks like the market likes those appointments. Tesla is up almost 6% today, and like a big boost came after the announcement pre-market. So it looks like it's directly linked to it.
Yeah, and the broader market's not up. The broader market's kind of even today, so
yeah. So definitely something happened with Tesla, and that must be it. Few things interesting, like they waited very last minute for it because today was the deadline for actually nominating those two new independent board members. So it's weird that they waited the last minute because they didn't wait last minute to remove Elon Musk from the role of chairman. So not sure what was the hold up on that. But, I mean, Ellison is a big catch as a board member. He hasn't been a board member of many companies. He was, of course, famously, briefly, a board member at Apple. I assume he was friend with Steve Jobs. Do you know that? Do you know if that was true, Seth?
Because he was best friends with Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was the cameraman at his wedding. actually, his, like, second of four weddings. But that's a pretty big friend right there.
Yeah, and apparently the only reason why he wasn't on the board anymore is because like he didn't have enough time, but he did find some time to come on Tesla's board, and it looks like his fascination with Tesla is like fairly recent because earlier this year he took a big stake in the company worth almost $1 billion right now. So it looks like he's very interested in Tesla this year. He both took a giant stake in the company and he became a board member. But apparently his friendship with Elon Musk dates back longer than that. In a recent interview, he called him a close friend. So,
but not close enough to breach the independence threshold.
Yeah, it's not reached it yet. He's still within it, apparently. I mean, it looks like a good catch for Tesla's board. I mean, listen, in terms of like he's one of the richest men on earth, like he's a multi billionaire. He's not a very controversial one. Normally, when you get to that like kind of wealth, you done some creepy shit before.
I think he's been pretty good at covering his tracks. The big controversy was him hiring that HP guy who got busted. The HP CEO, Mark Hurd, as a CEO, but that was, you know, small in comparison. I was working at Fortune at the time, and he was yelling at Fortune magazine for its coverage of it. So that kind of still remember that.
You hired him as CEO of Oracle, right? He's still
co-CEO. No, I think he's out now, and the woman he put in as co-CEO is now the full CEO.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, well, in terms of like the billionaire, like top five list, because I think he's up there really, like with the 60 billion network, he's probably one of the least controversial ones, the one that you hear the least really in the media, aside from like the Bezos and the Buffets, right, and the Gates in this world. So, and I mean, to be able to accumulate that kind of wealth, he has some good insights, I assume, and he could be a useful bang for Tesla, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, he certainly could. I mean, he's got, 60 billion? I think that's probably enough to get them through rainy days if needed, but I doubt that that's his role there.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't looking to raise much capital now, but all right, moving on. Tesla released a software update this week, very short one in terms of the release note, but kind of interesting because we don't really know what it does. The radios themselves are, I'm quoting, when you set mobile preconditioning to high, the climate system will better thaw your charge port in freezing conditions. So we've been talking for a while now that there's some issues with the Model 3s in cold weather, with the windows, with the door handles, and some people haven't been had issues with the charge port not opening, not unlatching when it's freezing outside. So, of course, that's an issue because you need to unplug the charging cable to be able to drive the car. And Tesla came up with a fix when we first reported on it a few weeks back. And the fix was to not latch the charging cable when it's freezing. So the downside is anyone can just pull on the cable and it will unplug. But the upside is that the latch won't freeze, so you should be able to easily remove the cable. Now Tesla is adding another fix where it would actually start to thaw the charging port so that if it's frozen, it will after a while unfroze. But I really don't get how they are doing that, because they say that they're doing that with the climate system, and the charge port is on the outside of the car, and it's at the level of the trunk of the car. So, I mean, how can they like send, like, if, and we're talking about a climate system, so they concentrate the hot air around the region of the trunk, and somehow that's enough to thaw the charge port? Am I getting this right?
Could they be creating some resistance there, like almost like a short? I don't know.
Yeah, that's could be something creative. Are saying, but the notes specifically say the climate system, so it has to be the heating system, right?
Maybe they thaw that corner of the car, you know, to a much larger amount or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. And I'm like, I haven't received that update either, so I don't know. Yeah, you just drove your Model 3. You didn't get the update too?
No, I didn't get it yet.
Yeah, it's the 2018.50. All right. Another update to the Model 3, but this one is not a software. It's a hardware update to the headlights. Apparently, Tesla did an update that we just didn't know about back in June. So new Model 3 made since June have updated headlights that scores a lot better on the IIHS satellite test.
Yeah.
That's what they call it. It's famously a very, very stringent test where it's very difficult to score to score good, like literally a good rating. Most get the acceptable rating, which was and some even get poor. Like the Mall has got a poor rating on this, but the IHS didn't release like their full safety test on the Mall 3 like they did with the Mall S. But earlier this summer, they did release the headlights test and the front crash prevention test. The Mall 3 did great on the prevention front crash prevention test, but they only did acceptable on the headlights rating. But this week, they decided to update it after testing the new headlights. And if you look at the charts here, they did a very big difference with the upgrade, especially with the high beams. Looks like almost a 50-foot difference on the...
Yeah, it's way bigger.
Yeah.
And even like the off to the corner stuff seems significantly further out.
So you have a pre-June Model 3. You had any issue with your headlights?
No, actually, I think they're pretty good. So it's kind of weird that they're having, you know, that they needed to upgrade, but I guess they can always be improved.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the glare is also an issue. Maybe that was part of the problem. Maybe there's less glare, so maybe they're less... You know, there's less in the oncoming traffic's eyes. Maybe that's a benefit.
Yeah,
because I have had people flash me thinking that I had my brights on when I didn't.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah.
So maybe that's actually part of the improvement.
Yeah, me too. And I have a post June headlights. So I don't know. Autopilot Hardware 3.0, that's something that we've been waiting for a while now because, well, Tesla's been talking about it ever since they released 2.0, really, because and they say that they released the 2.0 and they were like, oh, by the way, we might need to upgrade the computer because it's not powerful enough for fully self-driving, or it might not be. And later on, that was 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, and later on they did confirm it that, yes, indeed, they are working on a more powerful neural net computer. And apparently it's ready. They have it in employees' cars. But if you remember, by September, we reported on like an employee test program that Tesla launched, so that they could get feedback from employees, and in return, they give the full self-driving package for free, which is it's worth like up to $8,000 depending when you buy. Because of course, if you buy after delivery, there's an upcharge. Yesterday we reported on an email that Elon Musk sent to employees. They're still looking for hundreds more employees to test the program. They still have the same incentive, and that's pretty much it. In terms of the timing, though, it's still the actual upgrade itself is supposed to start in early 2019. And Tesla is, as usual, expected to release increasingly more advanced software updates, leading to fully self-driving by the end of next year, if you believe Elon Musk. But he's been wrong on the timeline before, so I wouldn't hold my breath.
Yeah, what do you think? Is this going to be actually future-proof, this version, or are they going to come out with a version 4 in 2 years that, you know, is 10 times faster than this one and really is enough to do?
Well, it's computing. It's computing power, so it always evolves. So,
right.
If I had to bet, I'd bet on a future version that's going to be better and better. But I mean, the goal is to at least have enough computer power to be able to handle that fully self-driving capacity. And if Hardware 3 really is able to do it, then moving to you certainly will be able in the future to have more computer power in the vehicle than that. But then what is that going to do? Is it going to be able to run a version of the self-driving software that it's safer? If it's that, that's certainly worth exploring. But what kind of feature you need beyond fully self-driving? I mean, fully self-driving enables everything else. So it's really going to be like a level of safety, I think.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's probably something that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, we can even imagine it, right?
I mean, maybe it's like a VR headset or something crazy.
So you can travel to another world while you're inside your vehicle driving itself?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what you need.
So yeah, that hardware update I mean, that's going to be crazy. The retrofit itself is going to be insane, right? Because there's going to be hundreds of thousands of cars that need the retrofit. And then all of Tesla's cars in production is going to have the new computer too. So Tesla's going to need to be able to produce that computer by the tens of thousand per, like 10,000 units per week, plus create a backlog of 100,000s of units.
And theoretically, these are high powered machines. So it's not like, you know, putting a Mac Mini in there. It's going to be a very advanced system.
Exactly. All right. So it's going to be a weird few months, I think, for Tesla. The referral program got another update, like the, what is it, third time this month or something? It was supposed to end on the 31st. It was extended until March 11th on Christmas Day, actually. And Tesla added an additional 3 months of free supercharging if you order the car without a test drive. So it's an additional incentive on top of everything else so that you don't have to get a test drive. And of course, that the goal of that is to reduce the workload on Tesla. And during that last week, that's going to be a crazy week for deliveries and for all retail employees, basically. And also the logic is if you got a referral, then someone made the referral to you. So that person should have been able to give you a test drive to get the referral. So the logic is good, but of course that doesn't really happen all the time. I mean, how many referral you got set and how many test drive you gave? you know, so that, and the same for me. So, but I mean, we provided values in other ways. So to those person using the referrals. And they did update the prizes too that you get for accumulating some referrals. There's now one that makes a lot of sense, the new Forge Performance wheels for the Model 3. So the third one was always new wheels for the Model S and X, but Tesla has added the Model 3 to the referral program for a long time, and Model 3's owners just didn't have much use for those. Could just sell them, basically, and buy the performance wheel for the Model 3, but which are cheaper. So actually, no, actually, it's a downgrade, really, when you think about it. All right. The supercharger program, Tesla, Elon Musk sent out some kind of a little update about the European expansion and expansion in cities. So he said in 2019, Tesla is going to drastically increase the number of charging supercharger within cities to address the issue of EV ownership for apartment dwellers and people living in cities. That has been a problem for a while, and a bunch of companies trying to solve the issue. And Tesla's approach is more superchargers within cities instead of focusing on between large areas where there's high traffic. And of course, destination chargers are also a big deal for that. He also talked about expanding in Europe. He wants to cover Europe 100% by the end of next year. So I think that was also the case last year. So it's one of those deadline that you need to be careful about. Specifically,
how feasible is that?
I mean, you look at the chart, like the map here.
It looks real dense, yeah.
Well, when you say 100% coverage, too, it means like you could technically go anywhere in Europe using the supercharger network. So, I mean, I guess that could be what you mean by 100%, but
it does give you long hops between points, I guess.
Exactly. So it wouldn't be like an optimized version of the network in Europe. It's just one that you can truly, like, you have a range of 150 miles between all supercharger stations. Would make sense, but specifically now he says between you can go from Ireland to Kiev. And from Norway to Turkey. But if you actually look at the map, there's some station all the way to Moscow too. So that's even more east than Kiev, right?
Yep.
So I don't know. Maybe they gave up on the Russian expansion. That's been something that's been difficult for them for a while to try to expand in Russia. Not the most welcoming place, really. And yeah, so like we said before, I mean, those announcements are nice, but if you look at Elon Musk's track record on announcing new Supercharger expansion, he's being very wrong this timeline a lot. But where I'm hopeful, though, is that the Supercharger V3, which was supposed to come this year, but now has been delayed to early 2019, they might just be waiting for that. So it's sort of a bummer if you like spend millions and millions deploying hundreds of charging station with the technology that you know is going to be outdated in a few months. So it would make sense to slow down the current deployment of supercharger station until that V3 is ready. But that also been delayed a few times. So hopefully it's coming next year, soon next year. And then that's when they really unleash the deployment of more stations. All right, moving on. Eatergo, I was really impressed by that when you first reported on it last year, earlier this year, I mean, and we saw it at the in Milan. The design of the battery pack for that scooter is just great, and now it's not just going to be a prototype, right? It's actually going to production, Micah?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the ones that I'm more excited about because it just has such a unique design. So they just raised 10 million euros from a mystery German automotive company. We don't know which one, but they're narrowing down their production partner. I think they have the short list down to three different factories that they're choosing between, and they're planning to go into production pretty soon. So they've already got a ton of pre-orders all across Western Europe. I think the first batch is entirely sold out, though I don't know that they've published exactly how many they're planning to produce. But it's pretty exciting to see this scooter going into production because it's just such a innovative design. This is the one that has those long banana-shaped batteries that slide down under the floorboard. And so that leaves all of your cargo space open, which is really cool because generally you can either have cargo space or you can have a lot of batteries, but you can't have both in these scooters. So this is the first scooter I've seen to give you huge range. I think it's 240 kilometers, like 150 miles. And a ton of storage space. So I always like to include the picture they show of putting a case of beer in the back because yeah. It's those like weird big objects that are always annoying to carry on a scooter. And so the fact that you can fit that giant 24 case of beer is pretty impressive in this scooter.
Yeah, for sure. And those battery pack are not only like large and they're also removable and you can carry them. And so you can replace them and have even more range than 150 mile because you just swap them and it's not more range, but you can leave like only, you can get four in there, right?
I think you can get three in there.
Three in there. So you can just swap one and put another one and then instantly have more range. So.
You can practically ride around with a couple on your back, just wear them like a backpack, like an archer's.
And it's also some kind of a good example of crowdfunding actually working because that was originally crowdfunded, right? Yeah, 5 million crowdfunded, and now there's an investment from a big automaker. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, people like to knock on the.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So people like to knock on the whole crowdfunding thing. Like anytime they see like a Kickstarter or Indiegogo, they assume it's a scam, which is unfortunate because even though there are some of those, you know, scam Kickstarters out there, there are a lot of companies that get their legitimate starts from crowdfunding. And this is a good example of one that succeeded. So yeah, I think it's cool that this company is looking like they're going to make it.
Mm-hmm. And was that crowdfunding like they were like pre-sales or was it crowd investing?
It was, I think they technically did the pre-sale model, but it was, I think like a very low amount. You're putting down like 5% or something towards the final cost of the scooter.
Okay. And so those people, do you know when they can expect their scooter now that there's some solid investment behind the manufacturing of it?
I don't think they've given an exact date, but it's definitely 2019. I think they were aiming for quarter one. I'm not sure if that's still the date because they're still looking for a production partner.
Mm-hmm. And they're going in Europe first.
Yeah, so it's mostly Western Europe. It's like I think Netherlands obviously first, Germany, France, and okay. Spain, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Spain, Switzerland, they're saying. All right. And either ago, it was one of the scooter, well, one of the personal electric vehicle that you put in your list to something to watch in 2019 for all personal transportation. There's a bunch of other stuff here. Harley Davidson, the Super SoCo. What are you most excited about for 2019 in the motorcycle scooter space?
Oh man, it's like asking who your favorite kid is. I think that Super SoCo TC Max. Mm-hmm. I think that's really exciting because it fills that middle ground between, like, on the one hand, you have the zero electric motorcycles, which are like, those are real motorcycles. You know, you can go 100 miles an hour. You can take those on the highway. And then you've got, little things like the scooters and the City Slicker. But the Super SoCo TC Max is a 60 mile an hour sort of middle ground motorcycle. And I think that's a really neat space because it opens up the door to people who aren't ready for like a big, powerful motorcycle. This is only, I think, 5 kilowatts, so you're not gonna be popping wheelies, but it's a super convenient commuter. And for I think it's $5,000-something, I think it's below 6,000.
Yeah, 4,500 euros, so $5,100.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, that might raise a bit when you come to the US. They're gonna have to mm-hmm. Import them, and there might be some certification cost, but you're talking about well under the cost of a zero. I think the cheapest zero starts at like 8,000 or 9,000, but by the time you get it, it's probably 10,000 delivered. So this is a very much an affordable electric motorcycle, and they're in the process of bringing it to the US. It's already going to be in Europe shortly. They've got all the certification.
Yeah, this is the first quarter.
Yeah, so that's like basically a done deal. But mm-hmm. the fact that it's coming to North America is also really exciting because we're actually going to get to play with them.
Yeah. And it looks like it won't be alone in that. Like, it's almost like a new segment they're creating, basically, like you said, between the something like a scooter and a full motorcycle. And I mean, if you just look at all those, and you guys need to watch that post if you're interested in what's coming on the market next year. But even the... the Fly Free, that's also in the same segment, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're a little bit lower spec, but same thing. It's about like a 50 mile an hour sort of middle ground. I'd call it like a light electric motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And these are neat because they're very retro styled. So if you're into that, you like the old cafe racers, the old scramblers, it's a neat looking bike.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot. This looks like 2019 might be a comeback, like the retro style with the EVs. The Honda, too, I think the little urban vehicle that Honda is going to launch the next year. They're also sticking up with the retro style. And if you look at those market bikes, not just this one, but the Tarfrom is also retro looking a bit. Well, with a futuristic also twist to it, but
yeah, that's got an interesting mix.
Yeah, but this one is high powered, right? Is it
The Tarfrom?
Yeah.
It's decently powered. It's more of like the, I don't want to say luxury because it's not like, it's not going to be as expensive as some of the other ones, but it's more of a specialty, electric motorcycle, I'd say.
Okay.
It's got also a lot of 3D printed parts. It's very much like a, I don't know if they're actually gonna be hand assembled, but it's sort of like a bespoke type, electric motorcycle as opposed to some of these Asian ones that are going to be these more mass produced bikes.
Yeah, City Slicker, that wasn't available yet. I don't know if you tried it, but...
So, yeah, that one's actually just becoming available now. It's a 2019 model, but the first shipment actually arrived in the U.S. About a month ago, and I actually have one of the first ones right now, and it's super fun. I'm loving that little bike. It's kind of a scooter in a motorcycle shape. in terms of the performance.
What kind of license do you need for that then?
So it really varies by state, unfortunately, at least in the United States. In most states, you're probably going to need a motorcycle license. There's this weird law in Massachusetts that mini motorcycles are qualified as motorized scooters, kind of like a Lime or a Bird. And so I'm
really
kind of, yeah, it's a weird law that they passed because there was a period where a bunch of kids were riding around on like pocket bikes and stuff. So they tried to lump them all together and make them harder to get on the street. But I'm trying to get it registered like that so I don't have to go through the whole like motorcycle registration. But I think in most states, the speed alone is going to put it in motorcycle territory because it goes up to 46 miles per hour.
I'm surprised it doesn't qualify as like a scooter, you know, like one of those like lower powered like street scooters.
50cc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, like that's the frustrating Honda thing. Because for gas bikes, it's usually done by like engine displacement, which is fairly equivalent to power. But for e-bikes, like there's not really a good engine displacement, and they don't rate them or they don't register them usually by power. So you can't say like, oh no, it's only like 1.5 kilowatts because it goes 46 miles per hour. It's usually over the scooter and moped limit, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So most people are going to need a motorcycle license for that. But if anything, like it's probably a good idea because I think in pretty much every state to get a motorcycle license, you have to do the MSF safety training. And that's just a good idea for when you're riding these things. Even if you're riding a scooter, it's good to have that safety training.
Yeah, for sure. And Harley Davidson's also with the LiveWire should finally come next year. And that was of course, the LiveWire program itself has been long in the making, but it's also at the same time, you have to give it to Harley Davidson here, because if you look at actual like established motorcycle maker, they're really the first one to come with to production with an all-electric bike, right? I'm talking like we've seen a ton of startups, of course, and Zero now is a full-fledged company. It's not just a startup. But in terms of gas-powered motorcycle makers like Yamaha, Honda, all those guys are not actually going to production with an all-electric ones. So
yeah, absolutely, which is kind of amazing because those guys are so much closer to the supply chain for a lot of those parts.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like Harley-Davidson does deserve props. Not only did they sort of get the ball rolling with the LiveWire, but they've already got multiple vehicles sort of in the early stages of preparation, from electric dirt bikes to lighter electric motorcycles and even an electric bicycle, which is kind of an odd move, but you know, I'd rather see them doing more than less.
Yeah. And those are not going to be released next year, right? Are we going to see them maybe next year?
I don't think we'll even see prototypes next year. They said, I think by 2023, maybe 2022. That's, whoa. Yeah, those are.
Dang, they work slow, right?
I mean, yeah, right.
Geez. We're not used
to that. It was interesting, though, because I was talking to some Harley execs, and what they said is that they definitely get the, it's not the execs, sort of the marketing people, rather. They definitely get the feeling that the company is embracing the electric vehicles, because before, whenever Harley was working on a new vehicle, they wouldn't talk about it. Like, there wasn't any pre-release drawings, there wasn't any scuttlebutt that was leaking out. They didn't talk about new vehicles, and they're already showing what they're working on for these new electric bikes. And so I think that's sort of an important move, because it shows the company is actually committed to these things, and they want to show that they're working on electric vehicles, that it's not just lip service, they're not just doing this one bike.
Yeah. And this one bike is actually coming to market next year. And we should know more as soon as next week. Stay tuned for that. A bunch of other interesting stuff in your post. The Vector, we saw the Vector in Milan, right? Yes, we did saw that.
Yeah, talk about a specialty bike.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, 355 units, so it's not like a big... It's gonna make a big impact on the market, but... For the ultra luxury fans here with a $100,000 bike, it might be something that you're into. Not for me.
I mean, Tesla started with the Roadster, right? You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, they did it at a time when no one thought you could make an electric car. at this point, I think everyone knows you can make a motorcycle, electric motorcycle, but there's still room in the market for at that end of the market. The Vespa is coming next year. All right, that's another one that's been on the making for a long time.
Yeah, it should be actually real early next year. I think in the first quarter they plan on starting deliveries. So we should be seeing, you know, probably some early reviews out of Europe in the next month or two, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be exciting. They said that later in 2019, they'll be coming to the U.S. So we could be having them in the U.S. as well. We'll see if they stick to that schedule.
Yeah,
it is exciting. The thing that kills me about this is the price. It's like the euro price is like $7,000, which for the specs doesn't really seem worth it to me, which is unfortunate because I want them to succeed. I want like a big auto manufacturer.
Oh, did we just lose Micah here?
No more Micah.
Well, Micah is...
I want the Vespa to succeed too. Like,
he was so upset about the price of the Vespa that his connection just broke.
He's back.
That's what it was. Yeah.
You were saying, Micah?
Yeah, I just got so angry. No, like I want them to succeed, but I mean, for a scooter that goes, I think it's like 30 miles an hour, which I believe is the legal limit for scooters there, which is why they went with that low limit. It just seems like too much money for buying the brand name, you know, buying something that says Vespa. So
yeah, it definitely comes with a name tag here. That's the
thing
that comes with the price. Yeah. The other one here, the Zap, that's a first for me. Did you report on that before?
Yeah, so I reported on it about a month ago when it was first announced. There's not a lot of info about it yet. I don't know how many prototypes they have. I mean, we've seen the specs. It's supposed to be very high-powered, pretty sporty for a scooter. The design is also interesting. Like it definitely departs from your standard scooter design, which was basically sort of the Vespa design for the last half a century. So I like where they're going with it. Mm-hmm. It's also great to see, it's a UK company. So it's great to see, you know, a British manufacturer getting into the game, but I'm withholding judgment until I actually see these things on the road.
Yeah. We'll almost see, 'cause it's, like it could be foldable. The design.
Yeah. I've seen drawings where there might be these like cargo sections added under the seat there. Because even with like the suspension, I think there's still a decent amount of room there for some storage, because it is that weird looking sort of Z design.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I don't know. I'd love to see how they actually make it to production and how they perform, because there's some pretty high specs.
And NIU is also going to be launched next year. So that's one that has a high expectation, because they just raised a lot of money on the public market.
Yeah, and they also have a good track record. They already have their previous generation scooters in Europe, and people really like them. When we were at the EICMA Milan Motorcycle Show, there were a bunch already there in Milan, and everything I've heard from people that are using them in Europe is that they're just really nice, well-made scooters. So I think that they're going a long way to showing that this sort of made poorly in China idea is not really fair, that there are a lot of good companies developing good electric scooters in China, and NIU is definitely one of them. So these NIU scooters, the new scooters that are coming out, the M Plus and the NGT, are just even better improvements. They've got a lot of the smart connected features, you know, that you can integrate with your phone. The NGT is the higher speed one, which I think a lot of people are looking for. So many companies are making those 28 mile an hour scooters to fit into a lot of those legal limits. And it's nice, but there's a lot of cities where 28 isn't quite enough. So the NGT, I think, goes up to 70 kilometers per hour, which is like 45 miles per hour, I want to say. And so that, I feel like, is another nice sweet spot. You might need a motorcycle license for it, but I think it's definitely the higher end of the commuting range that is going to be a lot more convenient for people that are doing more than just very much inner city riding.
Yeah, and it's still a lot cheaper than the Vespa.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The NGT that you just mentioned start at 4,500 euros. So.
Yeah, and I kind of like the design. It's like a sort of an updated Vespa, right? It's like Vespa style, but of the future.
Yeah, there's definitely some resemblance, but yeah, I like it too. We saw quite a few in Milan, and I was impressed, even though I'm not a big scooter guy.
You won't hold it against you.
Speaking of scooter, but now we're getting to different kind of scooter, the Kicks electric scooter. You just reviewed the Voro Motors, which is sort of a rugged take on the Kick scooter, which is not really something that you rugged is not really an adjective that you think of when you thinking of scooters, right? Of Kick scooters, I mean.
Yeah, this thing, it was kind of hilarious because you don't expect to get on one of these and have them feel so powerful or like such a vehicle. You're just like the Lime and the Bird scooters, you get on them and you feel like you're kind of riding around on a stick with wheels. But this thing, it's got full suspension. It's really powerful. Like they call it a 600 watt motor, but it actually pulls 1600 watts of battery power. You know, who knows how much that's getting to the ground, but it's a very high power scooter. And it's got super long range too, 50 miles. So it's definitely a commuter vehicle, and it's just super comfortable to ride on too. Your legs don't get tired because the suspension's actually working. Some of the scooters have those like sort of novelty suspension components that it's like a little spring that doesn't really do anything. But this one, I was riding it off road on trails and jumping off curbs, and basically I was like beating the crap out of this scooter, and it was surprisingly comfortable to ride. So this one was just a really, really well-made scooter that was a hoot. It's a bit expensive. It's like $1,200. But when you compare the specs, I mean, it's got like 5 times the battery capacity of a normal scooter. So you're buying a bigger motor, a bigger controller, a much bigger battery, and parts that aren't going to fall apart on you.
Yeah, my only concern about it is like you said, it's more expensive, but who's riding a Kick scooter for 50 miles, too? you just don't do that, right?
I mean, yeah, if you don't have charging options or something.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So the thing is that you can use it all week without charging it.
Exactly,
you use it for commuting every day. But no one has a 50-mile commute that they're doing in a scooter. That's just not the reality. Yeah. But I mean, $1,200 is not that expensive for what it is because... like you said, it's a lot more robust and with the parts and with the suspension and everything. Though I feel like a lot of scooters are going that way too. I mean, just with because who's going to be driving the market now? It's going to be the Lime and the Birds of the world. And they're all coming up with their new design of more commercial looking and more robust scooters. So I think the market is all going to go that way, really, because people are going to get used to riding those scooters when they use the app. And then if they want to go with their own personal private scooters, I think they're going to be used to higher quality. So the little cheap stuff that costs a few $100 are not going to cut it anymore, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies rushed those out. It was sort of their minimum viable product so they could start selling something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as people start riding the more robust scooters, they're going to see just how much more comfortable and convenient they are. I mean, and yet they're also just safer too. Like, the thing's got like 6 different lights on it. It's got turn signals. It handles better. If you're going 20, 25 miles an hour, you want to be on something that feels safe and, mm-hmm. and doesn't feel like a Kick scooter.
For sure. And speaking of cheaper electric vehicles, the Great Wall Motor, they unveiled this week.
This one.
You like it? Why do you like it, Sid?
It's not ugly. It's actually it's like good design. Like they've actually spent some time designing it. It doesn't look like some other thing that they've copied, like Teslas get copied and Volkswagens get copied. This kind of looks like its own design, and like the specs are crazy. Like close to 200 miles of range for under $10,000, and that obviously that's after incentives, and I'm sure that the Chinese government is probably incentivizing its production a little bit. But what you get for what you get a good looking car. It's probably going to kill you if you crash. That's fine. That's I mean, like, let's be honest here. Like, I'm sure it's not going to pass Western safety standards.
No, for sure not. But apparently, the thing that, though, consider the, that Aura brand, that's the new brand, the new electric brand for the Great Wall Motor, which is also like a gas powered car company in China. They made a separate brand for the electric car, and that the first one that's going to be released under that brand. Apparently, they have a global ambition for that brand. So
that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
With some, you know, safety standards. I mean, obviously, just even India alone would be a huge advantage. And there's like billions of cars or billions of vehicles in India are really bad with pollution. So there's plenty of market for that thing. If they can make it at that price, you know, they're gonna do well.
Yeah, the price is really the main feature here. I mean, at $9,000, it's really attractive. But like you said, that's after subsidies. The kind of subsidies you can get in China are not the same everywhere. So even though in India, I think they have one too, but not as aggressive as this one. So it'd still be probably like a $15,000 car in China, which is not exactly expensive either, but it's still something to think about. And yeah, I mean, you get a 33 kilowatt-hour battery pack in that thing. So that's how you get about, they say almost 200 miles of range, but that's the NEDC standard. So it's probably going to be closer to 150, but like 150 sounds reasonable with 33 kilowatt-hour power, a vehicle of that size. And I mean, the motor here, it's not like you can drive crazy in that car, a 35 kilowatt motor for...
Yeah, that's a low-end zero motor. So...
Yeah,
the guy on the zero motorcycle is going to have a higher power motor than this car.
Yeah, and then you got four contact points instead of two. Just as bad of a battery, basically. Yeah, they're saying about the top speed of 100 kilometers an hour. So that's not ideal because, I mean, you can go on the highway, but I wouldn't hang out there too long.
Yeah, I wonder how it does on hills. Like, if you got four larger people in that thing and you need to go up a big hill, is that enough power to get the car and those people up that hill at like street speeds? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, well, I'd like to find out. I mean, we so often talk about cars in China because they have so many different options that we don't have here. And we talk about them like in theory, but it'd be great to go test some of them out because they have a ton of them at the lower end for sure. And I think we'd probably get a different opinion if we can actually like touch the car and get inside and everything because they have to cut the cost somewhere, right? And it always looks good in pictures, but in person might be another thing. That said, they also have a ton of the car on the other end of the spectrum that we don't have here. I mean, we talk about a lot of the Xpeng, Neo, the ES8, and now the new EX6. That looks like a great car that we need to try. So, yeah, China's going to be a trip in China's probably going to be in our future too.
Yeah, as far as Neo is concerned, they've been reaching out to us, and, you know, we have primarily a Western audience quite a bit. So I believe that Neo has ambitions to be in the U.S. as well. And they're also sponsoring Formula E.
Yeah, they are behind that too. Yeah, they for a long time, they were calling themselves like a global brand, right? Mm-hmm. We're saying we're not just a Chinese brand. We're a global brand. But now their U.S. CEO left recently, so I don't know what's that about. And, of course, all their sales and manufacturing is in China, so that makes them very much a Chinese brand.
Yep.
But either way, we should check them out, even if they don't come to the U.S. And Micah is pretty a thing to check out in China, too. I feel like that's the heaven for the scooter, the electric scooter craze. How many sales per year do they sell electric scooter? It's in the tens of millions per year there.
Yeah, it's definitely at least 10 million. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're really ahead
I'd
of the
probably have more. I'd probably have more things to see there than you guys would.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have to arrange a trip in 2019, go to China, check it out. But that's pretty much it for us. This, not only today, but for 2018, that's the last episode of 2018. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. We're going to be back next week as usual, and it's going to be 2019. So see you next year, guys. Ciao.